Good evening, everybody. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome on the first floor of this house. Please do not go upstairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening we're going to do steps 8 and 9. We're going to take 2 weeks to do steps 8 and 9, but it's part one of steps 8 and 9. Turn the meeting over to Graham.
Hey, everybody. I'm Graham. I'm an alcoholic. Welcome you all to this meeting tonight, and this meeting started up a few months ago in David's house, and it grew out of a desire. Him and I were talking a lot about how we really wanted to try to do in a meeting what we do when we meet with guys we sponsor at Starbucks, you know, just really try and get into the action of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and also ourselves to recommit to taking those actions on a regular basis. There's people in the room that know more about the Big Book than we do. We're not experts on Alcoholics Anonymous or the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're not really here to teach people about it. We're just here to share our experience, strength, and hope out of the Big Book and the paragraphs that we have found have really helped us to stay sober and live reasonably comfortably most of the time with the illness of alcoholism. So anyway, we're already at step 8 and 9, and we're going to kick off on page 76 in the Big Book. I'm going to start off with that paragraph that starts, "Now we need more action," and that's on page 76. And I think there are maybe some more seats in the room in the back, Robert, if you don't. Thank you. Okay, so I'm just going to read it. "Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning, we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And as usual in the book, there's a little recap in here. It's sort of back to front, but it talks about victory over alcohol. And I got to the situation where I was 25 years old and for several years had been regularly contemplating killing myself because my life just became so unbearable. I was at college at the time. I was doing well in college, but I just felt awful. I'm a guy that when I start to drink, I get insanely drunk usually. It just seems like a good idea, even though I didn't intend to. And then I do all these things. I often go into blackouts and I can't remember them the next day. And then I wake up in the morning or this few mornings later and I'm like, oh my God, I did it again. And I feel absolutely terrified and ashamed. And then I tell myself, I'm not going to do that again. And I do it again. And on my own, I cannot stay stopped. I can stop drinking, but I can't stay stopped. And like it says in here, really what's going on here is that I am somebody who has huge problems living sober. And that's really the problem. The problem was never really the booze. The booze was what allowed me to live in this world feeling reasonably comfortable most of the time. What the real problem has been in my life is living sober, dealing with reality on a daily basis. I don't like it. I've never liked it. I still sometimes think I was born in the wrong century, to the wrong family, and maybe even on the wrong planet, I don't know. So, but here I am, right? So what are we going to do? And I tried to get off the planet. So anyway, and here, yeah, many times, and here it talks about the need for more action. And this was really pummeled into me by the first couple of sponsors that I had. This is a program of action. What that means is I'm going to have to do stuff. And I'm going to have to do those things consistently. So more than me changing my mind and more than me changing my belief, my experience with Alcoholics Anonymous has been, it's very much about changing my actions. And if I change my actions and take certain actions one day at a time consistently, the belief and my feelings may follow those actions. Or it may not, but I'm going to keep taking those actions. And it's really stressed in here that I need to take these actions. Now, this is wonderful because for a while in AA, there was a big thing about you had to burn your fourth step after you did step five. So I want you to picture in your mind all these recovering alcoholics in early recovery, probably sometime in early morning or maybe at night time out the back of a building somewhere with some matches and this big piece that probably one of those spiral-bound notebooks trying to get it to go on fire, saying some crazy stuff like, I release you, I release you. I'm free, you know. I'm done with it now, I burned my past, it's gone. And then they go back to the big book and it says, we have a list of all persons we harmed. We made it when we took inventory. That's the list. And I just burned it. And it even goes further and says that that's the key to the future. It's that list. So I need that list as my fourth step. And when we got to this part in the book, it dawned on me with horror that this guy was really suggesting that all these people that I hate are the people that I have wronged and the people that I'm actually going to have to sit down face to face with and say, you know what, I was wrong and I was selfish and I was dishonest. And that really horrified me, that idea. And this is, I had taken steps 6 and 7, it still horrified me. The book, as we'll see later on, has got a much nicer way of saying that, but I wasn't happy about this. I started to realise what it was they were talking about. And it brings me back again to this idea of self-will and running the show myself. And that is my great delusion, that's my great wrong idea, is that I'm in charge of everything and I'm really God and everybody's just like a walk-on part and I'm the star of the movie. You know, I'm the movie star, you guys are merely extras. And, you know, I'll just treat you however I like and tell you exactly what to do, use you, just do whatever I want. And what I'm starting to realise by this point in the steps and what I realise in my life today is that the result of that is I end up alone in a room thinking about killing myself again. That's where it leads me. And I've ended up there in sobriety by behaving this way, by just treating people like dirt, by treating people as things to be used by me. So that's where I end up, by running the life, my life, on self-will and being the director. And then again, it's that very simple prayer. It says, Graham, if you're not willing to do this, if you're not willing to go out to these people and try to repair the damage you did, then just ask and the willingness will come. So it's this very simple relationship with a power greater than me. It seems to be based on me asking. It tells me just to ask over and over and over again. So God, please give me the willingness to go out to these people and repair the damage I've done in the past. It's very simple. It couldn't be that simple, could it? So, and then once again, am I serious about this? And a lot of times I've felt myself balking at step 9, and we'll talk a bit about that more later. And what that means is, I'm not going to humble my pride and go and apologize to that person or admit where I was wrong. And what it does is it takes me back to step 1. Is that a step 9 problem or is it a step 1 problem? Do I really think I'm as bad as the other people in AA that I actually need to go and see these people and humble myself before them? Or is that just for the people in AA that are really sick? I can get away with this one. You don't understand what that guy did to me. So it seems to always come back to that. Do I want to stay sober? Do I want to not stay sober? Do I want to be free? Or do I want to be bogged down with these things? And remember, these are the things that have blocked me off. What have they blocked me off from? They blocked me off from staying sober, but they blocked me off from having peace of mind. They blocked me off from being comfortable in my own skin. They blocked me off from going to Harris Teeter and being scared about who I might see there. That's what it blocks me off from. They blocked me off from positive relationships with my parents and my family and other people at work. And that's why we're doing this. It's not a punishment. It's to set me free.
Yeah, I got to AA when I was 22 years old, and I was not ready to stop drinking. I was not ready to be powerless over anything. I did not accept what you guys offered around here, around these parts. And I spent 6 years trying to get away with drinking. I quit drinking hundreds of times. One time I quit for almost a year without any program, any help. Thank you very much. I was absolutely miserable, and I've talked about that at length before. But the clock's basically ticking on me. I can quit all the time, but I can't stay stopped. And there's something in me that's ill at ease with the world, with life, with my own place in the world without help, without chemical assistance, without a little grease for the wheels. You know, man, I just need a break, man. You know what I'm saying, man? And I just lived like that, off and on, for 6 years. When I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous this last time, I was 6 months abstinent of alcohol and driving around the city of Norfolk looking for buildings to jump off of, because I was convinced of two things. I did not want to drink anymore. I absolutely did not want to drink anymore. I had become convinced that it was not going to be any different. You know, if I started it, in a very short period of time, would be as bad as ever. And I saw what that looked like, and I absolutely desperately did not want that anymore. And I found that after 6 months of not drinking, that I really, really, really couldn't do it by myself. So I mention all that in case there are people in the room or in that condition or have been in that condition or trying to decide whether they need to be in these chairs. And it also took me 6 years to take the first part of the first step. You know, and I've been in some ways really kind of quarreling about the second part of the second step for the last 23 years. I'm really still a big fan of managing my own life, you know.
Yeah.
I really think that I should be in charge. I've got the keys, I got the wheel, I'm driving. I can see where you guys need a program. Me, I'm not convinced. So that's what I bring to this table today, and I balked the whole way. I spent my first couple of years in sobriety just really on the power of the fellowship, going to a lot of meetings, meeting people, finding out I could do things and have fun without a drink, tell a joke, dance, all that kind of stuff. I really believe I was having a spiritual experience with the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There is a power here, but it's not the tremendous fact, you know. The tremendous fact is that we have this program of recovery that will relieve me, it will change me into a person who's not interested in a drink. And I can tell you that that's what's sitting also before you today. I'm not interested in a drink. So it takes me a while to take the first part of the first step, still quarreling with the second part, but I'm willing to go forward. I don't believe in God. You guys help me out with that. On we go. 2 years to write that first inventory. So I finally do the fifth step, and I sit in the back of that room, and I tell that man all those things, you know, that I mean, I did the proper inventory. I got it down in black and white and saw how selfish I really was, how it was all about me, how I'm all really out to get stuff for me so that I feel better, my good time, David's comfort, David's ease, David's financial security, all that stuff's very important to me. I'm not losing any sleep over whether or not you guys are doing fine in those areas. Me, I'm tossing and turning over that stuff all the time. So, but I gave that stuff, including the sordid little disgusting things like we talked about last week, and then I drive home and I take my quiet hour and I review the first five proposals and I'm willing to go forward and I say that prayer, and I once again kind of rededicate myself to this relationship with God, this keystone idea. Like you got the wheel. I'm not qualified. I will go forward. And then I have to tell you that I feel a little bit like I want to put on the brakes at this point. It took me 6 years to take the first half of the first step, another 2 years to write the fourth step, and now, in a matter of hours, suddenly I have people to apologize to. I'm not pleased about that. So, and Graham pointed it out a couple when we got to the fourth step. This is a dandy time to leave AA, you know. This is a great time to say, you know what, I've had enough. I think I can handle it on my own. So, this is the other piece where I need a sponsor. I've got to have a sponsor because if I manage this process, I will do... And I'm speaking from experience. I will do the amends that will benefit me. Those go right at the top because I want to keep my job and I want to sleep in the big bed and I like being welcome at my mother's Thanksgiving table. Yeah. So I'll carry my hat like I've done all my life and tell them I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. Well, as a sponsor or the other thing that I'll do is because there's two or three on that list that I don't care if I ever see them again, and if hell freezes over, I will not apologize to that SOB. It ain't gonna happen. So then I'll consult myself, my favorite human power, and I'll decide when I get willing to make that amend, when I get willing to make that when hell freezes over amends, then I'll just go right at it and just knock them all out, you know? So thank God the sponsor comes to the rescue, and he gave me a very simple little tool. He said, look, and this isn't in the book, but it's part of my experience. He just said, look, I want you to just draw three columns, write the ones that you're willing to do now, the easy ones, the ones that'll benefit you, David, just put them right on there. And then the ones that you're not so sure about, and then put your nevers over in the third column, and then just go about doing the ones that you're willing to do. So now I've got track in front of the train again. And now I'm invited to look back and say, and I also think it's very interesting to say when we subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal, once again, he's reminded me that have I done a thorough job on this inventory? If there's anything I've left out, there's still time, you know? I can still talk to somebody about it. I can still make this eight-step list. We go out to our fellows to repair the damage done in the past, not from drinking. We attempt to sweep away the debris which is accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. He's reminding me once again, back to that keystone idea, with David, when you're driving the bus, it's going in the ditch. And this is what we're going to go out and do. And it was that first sponsor that also told me, basically, you're not going to go to those people, David, like you've gone all your life and apologize and say you're sorry. You're going to go to those people and tell them where you were wrong. So I was well in my 30s before I could articulate those words. I'm still not happy about it. And And he gives me another out, the one that I'm not willing to do. He gives me another out, a simple prayer. I just ask for the willingness. And then he reminds me, remember, we agreed at the beginning we were going to any lengths.
Grant. Okay, so we're just going to continue on with the paragraph below. That's the last paragraph on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we've gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. But our man is sure to be impressed with his sincere desire to set right the wrong. He's going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. And like I was saying before, you know, this idea of misgivings. Misgivings is a polite way to say I'm absolutely terrified and horrified all at the same time that I'm actually going to have to go and face these people. Because these are people I've been avoiding for a long time. And that's how I lived my whole life. I would go from group of people to group of people, from job to job, from college, from relationship to relationship. And I would basically burn the ground and burn all the bridges and hurt people and use them and then move on to the next place. Between the ages of, 17 and my early 20s, I left home multiple times for different cities in Europe to get out of there and make a new start. And guess what? I was there when I got there. And I met the party people and it all started up again. And so there was just a lot of wreckage that I had caused, a lot of people that I had hurt. And I certainly didn't want to go to any of them and say, I found God. You know, and it's funny because it's really funny and all that, but I did some really horrible things to people, you know, like the woman I was dating and claimed to love who I punched her face in, and she had big black eyes, and I smashed up the house drunk in a blackout one night. You know, that's real funny. And going to somebody like that and saying, you know what, I've found God, you know. Or maybe more recently, my father-in-law, who I owe money to, and maybe haven't been exactly fast about paying him back. It's interesting to go to that man and say, you know what, I'm really sorry I've been slow to pay, but I've found God now. You know, it's very interesting. And you see, I'm such a big deal. You know, I'm such a big deal in my own mind. I'm a legend in my own mind. And what I want to do at this point, and what I wanted to do at this point in recovery, I wanted to run around town and tell everybody, I'm in recovery, I'm in AA, I'm an alcoholic. Hallelujah. You know, and you know what I really wanted? I wanted people to understand me. And I wanted people to sort of let me off the hook for all the stuff I'd done to them. That's what I wanted. That was my motive. But I wasn't clear on that at the time. So it was lucky, as David said, that I had a sponsor who said, listen, shut up about that alcoholic stuff. Your mum and dad don't need to know that you're an alcoholic. They don't need to believe you're an alcoholic. They don't need to understand that you're an alcoholic. You need to understand it. And you need to shut up. How about you start being a son? How about you start being a brother? How about you start being a co-worker instead of being this big, huge deal that needs all this attention all the time? And so part of this was me being cut down to size by my sponsor. And I love this bit here, and this is something that we talk about a lot. I get all caught up in myself, even in AA, and the steps becomes an intellectual exercise. It's like a psychology book, and now I'm worshipping the big book. I know more about this than everybody else. Let's find out what this word means. Let's dissect this sentence. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? The reason I'm doing this, and it says it here again, I'm not doing this to become a big shot in AA. I'm doing this so I can be of help to other people. The steps are not the end. The steps are the pathway to the end. And the end is that I'll now be ready to work with other people. And that's what's going to save my ass. It's not sitting in here going over and over and over again. The steps. Obsessed. Write an inventory every day. Oh, I feel something. I need to write an inventory. Yeah? Sorry, you're dying of alcoholism. I need to write inventory. You know? Really? So it's very, very important for me that I'm clear on what's going on here. Because this is guaranteed to work, but I have to continue to take these actions. And I'll tell you, I'm a very flawed individual, very flawed, weak. I do sometimes these disgusting little things that I shouldn't do, or I don't do things that I should have done, and I feel bad about it. And I've continued to lie in sobriety. I've continued to be less than a gentleman in sobriety. I've continued to be lazy in sobriety. And the wonderful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous and the wonderful thing about whatever God is that I can hit the reset button today. I can hit the reset button today and I can start over. And this is part of that process, is going to people that I've hurt and just saying, you know what? I've got a sincere desire to set right the wrong. And I'll finish up with this on this part here. You know, this idea of talking about God, you know, to people that don't really know anything about AA or anything like that. My experience has been that it seems to go better when I'm much more practical than that. If I owe them money, we talk about me paying the money back. You know, if I was selfish, I talk about how I was selfish. And I talk about my wrongs in a calm, frank manner. And that seems to be more use than sitting down saying, hallelujah, I believe.
Yeah, the paragraph opens with my number, you know, as I go down, remember any links, and then probably there's still some misgivings. It's like, damn it, he's got me on every page. And I'm certainly uncertain about whether I want to show up in front of all these people. And I have never had the... You didn't have to tell me twice that I didn't know to need to go in there talking about God. I would have been very uncomfortable doing that. So he sucks me back in. Okay, good. It's going my way again. But at the top of 77, I love where it says, at the moment we're trying to put our lives in order, period. And that is, I don't know about you guys, but that's why I came here. I really wanted my life to be put in order. You know, that was the end game, right? That's what I want something. I'm here because I want something. I don't want what I have. I don't know if I want what you have, but I don't want what I have anymore. That's for sure. So yeah, I want to. At the moment, we're trying to put our lives in order. I'm like, yep. And I keep reading. Oh, but David, that's not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Well, let's skip down a little bit. I want to ignore that. You know, why is it a common experience? Just about everybody I know in AA says, you know, I read the book and then something jumped out at me that I'd never seen before. It's like there's only about 100 pages that describe the program. How many times could you read it and see something new? I just must have an immense capacity for just, yeah. Just ignore that. So, he tells me, you know, David, just like we talked about the prayers, I'm turning my will and my life over to the care of God. Take away my difficulties so I feel better. You know, I'm willing that you should have all of me so that I feel better. And he keeps reminding me that that's not why we're here, David. You're going to feel better, but that's not why you're here. That's not your real purpose. So, again, he's just refocusing me to that. So now I go down to the bottom there, and it's the man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. And that's the spirit. And we're going to talk more about that. But, man, I'm the same. I want to rush out and do these amends that benefit me, get her back. I want to make that amend right now, mm-hmm. The one that gets her back, the one that gets me paid. You know, I want all that stuff. So eventually, and it doesn't, in my experience, it doesn't really seem to matter. You know, if I just go do these things, however flawed my motives are, eventually I'm going to come down to having a sincere desire to set right the wrong and showing up in that spirit. And again, I got to echo that with my sponsor because I hear it in my head all the time. They don't get to hear you're sorry, David. They get to hear you were wrong. And it's hard when you're sitting in front of the man who wronged you as well. Here's where I was wrong. Here's what I did wrong. Here's what I'm willing to set straight.
Okay, we're going to go on to page 77 now. And it's just, we don't use this as an excuse. It's that middle paragraph. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude towards him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. Now, you know, for me, God, a lot of times in the context of alcoholism, is the simple actions of AA. And, you know, when it serves any good purpose, I'm happy to talk to people about my AA membership and what I've done to get sober and stay sober. But as it says, you know, a lot of times it's largely irrelevant to why I'm there talking to that person. The fact that I'm in AA is largely irrelevant. And then what it's doing is, and what I didn't realise for a long time, this part of the book really mirrors the part that dealt with the fourth step. The fourth step talked about the three ways that selfishness manifests in my life to destroy me: resentment, fear, and sex. Well, the amends are actually lined up that way as well. And now it's talking about making amends to people on my resentment list. That's what it's talking about. So I've got that list there. And it talks about how to approach the man that I've hated. And, you know, in a lot of the... I haven't done the inventory, I just live in that second column, which is the wrongs that you did to me. And there's loads of people in my life today, and I can give you a rundown on how they suck and what they did wrong to me. And I'll get you agreeing with me that I've been wronged, and that I could probably even talk you into coming round to their house with me and we'll get them. Yeah? I'm serious, that's how much I believe this stuff. It's true, they screwed me over. Yeah, they did, Graham. You're right. Let's go. Let's sort them out. And that's what I want to focus on. I want to focus on that. And it says, even though I've done the inventory, I might be a bit, you know, I might say, well, okay, he did all that stuff to me, and I sort of have a part in it as well. And I want to go over that again. What's this part in it? What's this part in it? Part in it? What are you talking about? It says, where am I to blame? It doesn't say where is my part, and he's still got that big part there, and he sucks. It says, where am I to blame? It says, we disregard him entirely. Yeah. So why am I focusing still on that? And I'm not keen about admitting my faults. And I've found this very, very difficult at times, to go to people that I despise and who I really believe have wronged me, and to go in a helpful and forgiving spirit and just tell them, you know what? I was really resentful. I've been very resentful towards you. I quit a job. This happened 5 years ago, 4 years ago. So I was probably 9 or 10 years sober. Far too sober for this to happen. And I'm in this office job, and I'm just like, I hate the bosses. I just hate them. I can't sleep at night. And I just quit. I never went back. And they were all worried about me. They wondered what had happened. And it took me maybe a couple of weeks. I called them up, and I met with them. And I remember sitting down. I hated that guy. I despised him. I used to call him Retardo. That wasn't his real name. But anyway, so I'm sitting across from this guy, and he's giving me his time, and I just remember looking him in the eye and saying, you know what, I owe you an apology. I behaved badly when I worked for you. I was very resentful towards you. And he's like, why? And I'm like, I don't even really know. I think, you know, I just behaved selfishly, and I was dishonest. I was lazy when I worked for you. And I just sort of put it out there. And the guy just sat across the table and nodded. And then we had a reasonably nice conversation, and we shook hands, and we went our separate ways. And I have hardly thought about that company or that situation since then. And prior to doing that, that thing was eating my lunch. I'd drive past that building in downtown Norfolk, and I'd be like... and my wife would be like, here we go again. She'd get the 2-hour version of how they wronged me. And I've ruined Saturday afternoon for the whole family. And now I'm like, my face is bright red and I'm like this, you know, wasted another day. So that's really the power of this in my life, is it allows me to live comfortably in spite of myself. And that's the power in it.
It's absolutely 100% of my experience that I have the same experience regardless of how the person that I'm showing up in front of receives it. And I've been received poorly as well and indifferently, and I've been received warmly. I've been received all kinds of ways. But if I go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, it really doesn't matter if I get thrown out of the office. The one that Graham brought to mind, and the reason I mentioned it is because, isn't it interesting that how you're going to receive it is the very first thing I'm thinking about? You know, I'm imagining how you're going to hear it, and how I'm going to explain it to you and convince you that I'm right and you're really the jerk, you know? And because that's really the goal, right? And it took me a long time to just say I'm sorry I was wrong, you know, because in my world I'm sorry I was wrong, and here's all the reasons I had to do that. Here's all the stuff you did to cause me to be wrong, you know. I mean, this is my natural mode, but I get my attitude together, and I've got to go check this box, and I got to take this have this amends with this guy that I hate, And the relationship's not completely burned to the ground. I mean, we still talk to each other, we still run into each other, but there's this animosity. I know I got to make amends to him, and I've got an expectation. I don't even know I've got an expectation until I was in the moment. Can I take you to lunch? I'd like to talk to you about something. I took this guy to lunch, and I just went to him. I said, "Listen here. I have been absolutely selfish. I didn't return your phone calls. I was thinking about myself. That was absolutely wrong of me. You know, I failed to consider you." And it was at that moment I realized that he agreed with me. What he was supposed to do was start telling me all the stuff that he had done wrong. And I'm saying, we're not even through the salad yet. I'm like, this is going to be a long... It's just courtesy that you confess. You know, he was not interested at all. He was like, "Yep, you were a jerk." So, you know, some of them you just have to take it. And the thing is no matter, you know, that was unpleasant in that moment, but that night I didn't spend any more time tossing and turning over that undone amends. You know, and I noticed I ran into him like a month later, and he was still kind of cool and jerky to me. But I noticed that I had nothing but love for this guy. I was absolutely happy to see him. It didn't bother me at all, whatever was going on. I was free from my demonstration, you know? And I don't know whether he was or not. He didn't appear to be. It's important in AA not to judge people. But stick with the winners.
We're gonna continue on page 77, and it's the bottom paragraph. So under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed, we stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling on admits his own fault, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam. And that's maybe for me the one of the big themes here. You know, it talks later on about as we've ceased fighting, and it talks about in the fourth step, you know, about not arguing and retaliating, and it comes back to this. And I'm somebody that, you know, I've got the gift of the gab, and I'm going to defend myself vigorously, you know, and I'm doing exactly what he said. Really what I'm doing is I'm telling you, no, I'm not wrong, you're wrong. That's what I do, and I can twist it right back on you. I can steal money from you and make you feel bad. You know, and I used to play my parents like a fiddle. Absolutely. I'm that emotional blackmail. I've got that down to an art. I can make you feel really, really bad as I'm screwing you over. So that's really the sort of character I'm bringing to the table here. And I love to argue and I love to defend myself. And really the theme through this whole book and leading up into this is saying, you can't do that anymore. Well, you can do it and have an experience with it. But then you'll have to go back and make an amend for the amend you just made. So how about you just shut up? Stop arguing. There's nothing to defend. I was wrong. And that goes along with the words, I don't know. I was wrong and I don't know. Not in my vocabulary before I came to AA. And today I take pride in saying those things to people. If somebody asks me something I don't know, I love to say, I don't know. I don't really know. I love saying that because in the past, if you'd asked me about nuclear physics, I would say, well, it's like this. You know, dolphin training, whatever. You know? Yeah, I know about how to train a dolphin. It's all in the first 6 months. You know, so it's, you know, I don't know it's not there and now it's there and I love it. I love just saying I don't know. It's so much easier because then I don't have the fear of, what if they find out I'm not a dolphin trainer? So, anyway, you know, and this thing about, it brings it back to drinking. This is not about drinking, but it is about drinking. You know, that's why I'm doing this. I'm not doing this as a punishment. I'm not doing this as an intellectual exercise. I'm not doing this to be goody two-shoes, to become good Graham. To become St. Graham of Norfolk. That's not why I'm doing this. I'm doing this because I'm an alcoholic and if I don't do this, I'm going to drink again. Or maybe I'll just be absolutely miserable for the rest of my life. So that's why I'm doing this. And it just reiterates what we've already talked about. I don't talk about what you did wrong. Why would I bring that to the table? That's just going to start a fight. And it talks about being calm, frank and open, and I think those are things that go along with this idea of humility. You know, it's a humble admission that I was wrong, and we've both talked about experiences we've had in the past, and I love this bit. You know, a lot of this is about a demonstration. It's about me showing that I'm willing to do this, whether it's helping people or whether it's making these amends. I'm willing to show up, and I think I'm still willing today to do that, to make the demonstration. And the outcome is nothing to do with me. It's none of my business what the outcome is. When I 12-step a guy, when I take a guy to a rehab or a detox or whatever it is I'm doing, when I'm sponsoring a guy, it's none of my business what the outcome is. That's nothing to do with me. My job is to make the demonstration, is to offer the help. And in this instance, my job is to show up and humbly admit where I was wrong and the nature of my wrongs. And to see if there's anything I can do to set it straight. That's it. If you punch me in the face, I'm going to call the police. You know, if you throw me out your office, I'm going to walk away. And if you give me a big hug, that's nice too. But the bottom line is, it's really none of my business. My business is to make sure that I show up.
Yeah, well, the things that are described in this paragraph really are, you know, the 99% of my experience. You know, if I can show up calm and frank and open, stick to my faults, I have never failed to make satisfactory progress in any of those endeavors. And I was thinking about one, and because some of these things do happen in God's time. I guess they all do, now that I think about that. See, I got step one problems. I was told that this very night by my sponsor. We can go back a couple of pages if you like. But I had one of those when hell freezes over amends. I had one that I swore that I would never apologize to, and I was sticking to that. And I'm probably 15 years sober at this point, and I was at the Wakefield campfire. And there was a workshop in the afternoon, and it was on the amends. And I walked out of that thing, and I was like, you know what? It's time. It's time to do this. I can't walk around like this. This is ridiculous. Who do I think I am? And so I made a phone call. I knew one guy who would still know where to track down Mike, my best friend from high school. So I called Steve, ring the phone. He answered. Damn it. Steve, it's Dave. You got Mike's number? He did. I wrote it down, you know, and hung up the phone, but I'm dialed in, man. I'm just like, I'm continuing to pray, and I'm like, all right, yeah, it's time. So I call, and I'm praying for voicemail, and I got it. Hey, Mike, this is David Francis. I haven't talked to you in a long, long time, and I'd love to talk to you if you were willing to. Here's my number. I hope you're doing well. Please call me back. Thanks. And then, oh man, I felt so good. I was like, it's very likely he won't even call me back. It's done, you know? And ring goes the phone. And we walk off, you know, I walk off and I talk to him. We end up talking for 2.5 hours. I mean, I knew his parents and he knew my brothers and sisters and my parents, you know? And we just had this beautiful, beautiful thing. And it was kind of one of those deals where we got to get together if I come to Norfolk. And both of us kind of knew that wasn't going to happen. And it was really nice, and I hung up the phone, and I walked back to the fire where we'd been playing guitars and stuff, and the other people that I'd been hanging out with said, where have you been, man? I was like, man, I just was inspired after that workshop to go make one of those When Hell Freezes Over amends. I just made it. And this woman looks up and goes, how do you feel? And this guy from Richmond goes, who gives a shit? I was like, yeah, exactly. It's another one off my list, man. How free do you want to be?
Okay, let's go to page 78. And it's most alcoholics owe money. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors, no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. So the first thing is, it tells me it's not just me that owes money. Most people in AA owe people money, and that's people that are just getting sober and everybody else. You know, most people owe money. Not everybody, but most people do. And this is exactly what I do when I owe you money. So I borrow some money from you, and as in the act of borrowing it, I'm lying to you. And I'm maybe even lying to myself. I've always got great intentions, and I intend to pay you back. But then what happens is, when it comes time to pay it back, I always seem to have something that I want to spend that money on for me. So the next time I see you, I remember that I owe you that money, and I feel bad. And I feel afraid that you're going to mention it. So what I start doing is I start avoiding you. And you a lot of the people in my case were members of my own family. And so now I'm avoiding people in my own family because I owe them money. Or when I'm with them, I feel very, very uncomfortable. And then the other thing I'll do is I'll start getting mad at them. And really what's going on there is that I'm really mad at myself. And I feel bad. And so I just cover it all up and bluster. Well, screw you. I don't like, you know, I don't want to be around you anyway. So it's very interesting to me how this fear can really start to dictate my behavior. And dictate my relationships with people. And really what it does is it cuts me off from all the people around me. It really isolates me. And I have examples of this from when I was drinking, but probably the most recent one is with my father-in-law. He lent us some money, and then I was dragging my feet on paying him back. And guess what? I was resentful at him, and I didn't want to go over there, and I felt very uncomfortable around him, and I always felt like I was walking on eggshells, and I was afraid that he was going to bring up the fact that I wasn't paying him back the money that I said I would pay him back. And I have to tell you, since I've been sending those checks regularly, my relationship with him just seems to have got a lot better, like magic. So isn't that funny? And then, you know, it talks a lot about I really have to lose this fear. And this is one of the few places in the book where it says, if I don't lose this fear, drinking could be on the menu for me. So they're emphasizing the seriousness of this. I really need to face up to this and take care of it. And I've always found when I approach people and just humbly admit where I'm at as far as money goes, you know, I can only pay what I can pay. Let's just start making the payments. And really, I'm buying my peace of mind. They just want their money back, right? It's not my money. They just want their money back.
Just want me to do what I said I was going to do in the first place.
Right.
Yeah, I continue to struggle with this. I have made and lost fortunes in the last 23 years. And when I'm in a fortune phase, when I got plenty of money, I tend to pay my bills. And, you know, my credit cards have been paid off. I've run up credit card debt, paid it off. You know, I've been through that cycle many, 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 many times. I'm currently in a down phase. So right now, there's mail on my desk that I'm not willing to open. So I cannot sit in front of you guys and tell you that I've lost my fear of creditors, that this is something that I've solved. It's something that's in process. You know, I am currently afraid of the IRS, the state, and the mortgage company, as well as death, poor health, being broke, and working hard.
Okay, we're going to wind it up then with this last paragraph on page 79, and it starts off, although these reparations... It's not the last paragraph on that page, it's the last paragraph we're going to read.
79.
Yeah, 79, it's near the top. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we've decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink anything. And again, this is really the importance of me having a sponsor. And there's 8 steps before this step. This is a dreadful step for me to comprehend, coming in the door to Alcoholics Anonymous. And having been in AA for years, it's dreadful to comprehend this at times. But there's 8 steps before this, and I'm not on my own. And I need to remind myself, why am I doing this? Really, what's being offered here is freedom. It's not just freedom from alcohol and alcoholism, from being dry drunk, but it's really freedom in my relationships and in my life in general. I don't believe that being sober involves a siege mentality where it's us in AA against them out there, and I'm going to live out the rest of my life in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? I'm going to 200 meetings a week. You know, really? Okay, that's fine. But my understanding is, and what I think the literature reflects is, this is really about going through this process, helping other people, and living a full, productive, positive life, free of alcohol and free of these petty resentments and fears. And even if I'm not free of them, I have a way now to hit the reset button and to get clear again. And I think that's what's on offer for everybody. And it's a guaranteed program. It's not just for, you know, this guy over here is going to get sober. I think if anybody does these actions, then they will get the result. Absolutely anybody, no matter how high or low they've gone. That's been my experience.
Let's let that be the last word. That was well said. All right, let's see. You know, if we had a basket, I would pass it. Somehow, Crystal gave us.
There's a little basket inside that thing in there. See, I borrowed that one.
Oh, that might be yours. Thank you.
Thanks, Patrick.
The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential. Lost my place. The seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting, home group members. There's literature available out on the same table where the coffee is. Please see a home group member. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. Would you read 164?
Me?
Yeah.
Okay. This is the last two paragraphs from page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you all for coming. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Where's Iran?
Right here. Obvious.
Can you lead us?
No.